Welcome to the Social Innovation Podcast. We give you insights into what is happening at the forefront of social innovation and guide you through the challenges and opportunities faced every day by the entrepreneurs and innovators pushing the field forward. I'm your host, Hendrik Storm-Dursen, and I'll be speaking with entrepreneurs, innovators, and investors to get the behind-the-scenes perspectives on social innovation. This podcast is sponsored this season by Lexell Social Ventures, Sweden's first impact investment firm and welfare innovators of the year 2016. Follow them and us at LexellSocialVentures.com, SocialInnovationPodcast.net, at Medium, Facebook, and Instagram. Today, I'm speaking with Martin Siltberg, who runs business development at Sana Labs, pioneering AI for education. Welcome to the show, Martin.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you here. All right. Who are you and what do you actually do?
Well, I'm Martin, and I run then business development at Sana Labs. And prior to that, I worked as a strategy consultant for a company called Bain for 4 years. And then I, by chance, ran into our CEO, Joel, and sort of was instant connection in him and also in Sana Labs and what we do. And I signed 4 days later.
There you go. Love at first sight.
Yes.
There you go. What was the connection in that first moment?
It was several things. But I mean, I think the first thing was really just around the purpose of Sana Labs. And we'll come to that. But I mean, the key purpose is really how do you make education better? And that was something that really sort of spoke to my sort of personal interest and something that I wanted to work with. And the second part is really the team that they had built and also sort of the role we were speaking about, sort of helping basically grow a startup. And I find that very sort of intriguing on a personal level.
So you were saying that you got fascinated by the prospect of working with changing, developing education. Is that something that you've had with you for a long time? Or is this something that you discovered kind of there in the moment? Or is this the direction of leaving a cruddy management consulting firm and taking the step? Is that something that was an easy choice for you? Yeah. What were the drivers and questions that arose for you there?
I think for me, the key part of, like, education has always been something that's been sort of warm to my heart. I think everyone has that special relationship. I mean, everyone's been to school, right? And since it was a little bit by chance that I met Joel, but still, when I did my research and sort of looked into education and how that works today, I was sort of struck by the fact that a lot of things seemed very, very similar to when I went to school. And talking to teachers and talking to people in the industry, I also realized that there is a large potential still to do change in this industry. And that was sort of what really drove me to Sana Labs. And if there's, I mean, in many ways, it's really similar to what I did at Bain & Company as well. Bain is all about delivering results to clients and making impact. And I think my work at Sana Labs is very much that, helping create results and impact, but for the education industry.
All right. So what's Sana Labs trying to do?
Yeah, what are we trying to do? So we see a big change basically happening in education, and that is basically this big transition towards digital. A lot of education companies are now switching to digital portals, digital materials. And in this shift, there's obviously then massive amounts of data being created. And you have data being created between the student, between the different platforms, but also if you think around the educational content. And this really opens up then very exciting applications for machine learning. And one of the biggest ones, and I'd say one of the most significant ones, is then around the topic of personalization. And personalization is a key topic in education because it was shown already in 1984 by a scientist called Bloom that if you have a personal tutor, those students basically perform, like, 98% of students with a personal tutor perform better than the average of those who doesn't have one. So it really sort of signals the power then of personalization. And recent studies from, for example, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation also shown really promising results from then personalized content. And that is really what Sana Labs is all about. That is, how can we bring the experience of a personal tutor, but do that in a digital setting?
That's really interesting. So you are looking at personalization as one of the key aspects then of evolving education. Just to unpick that slightly, because it sounds fantastic, obviously.
Yeah.
But the notion then of, you know, for me as a layman, hearing about the advantage of having personalized experience through perhaps a tutor, there's also a relationship in there.
Because
we're going to talk about technology and technological innovation, yeah. Right? So how much of it is the relationship to a person and how much is the personalization?
Yeah, that's actually an excellent question. And if you look at how you learn, so there's a lot of research in this, but something also called Bloom's taxonomy. And there's the first two steps of that is really around how you understand something or remembering something. And especially in the digital setting, I think there you have a lot of impact from personalized education. But it is exactly as you say that in some other types of learning activities, so when you need to maybe analyze, collaborate, teach, you know, which is also like a form of learning activity, then obviously you need to have the social interaction. And therefore, at Sana Labs, we are very clear that we are not a silver bullet. We will not change or, you know, disrupt education by ourselves, but we're one piece of the puzzle to help education better.
Right.
Or help make education better.
Right. So this is a fascinating challenge that we see some of the most interesting ventures run up against, which is if you're going into an industry that has a lot of practitioners and you're looking to augment the potential of the sector with technology, you could see potential tensions with, you know, what's the role of a practitioner once technology comes in. To draw a parallel, the field of mental health psychology has a challenge there where they know that the lived experiential learning in contact with, you know, the programmatic aspect of either therapy or other kinds of programs that would help people with emotional intelligence, the relationships, the actual person in the room or, you know, or on video is a really key component that they have a hard time getting away from.
Yeah.
They can convey the knowledge of emotional intelligence, but the experiential learning has been hard so far to digitize. It's much easier to imagine this in education, right? Because it's so content heavy. And then you need to channel the individual's interaction with content. And it's not necessarily that all education is about a personal interaction.
No, and I think it really goes to the topic of also sort of helping teachers. Like teachers play the most important role in a child's education, and in the future, teacher will still continue to play the most important role for a child's education. And on the topic of AI, one thing that I think is a little bit interesting is that if you look at, for example, in chess, if you take the best human chess player against an AI-backed chess computer, the human loses, right? But if you take a human, the best chess human, together with an AI chess computer, they actually beat another chess computer. And I think this is very much true in education as well, that new technologies will help teachers and help students and make their everyday lives easier and better. But it's absolutely not a substitute.
So augmented teaching, rather.
Yeah.
So you told us about the broad strokes of what Sana is after in changing education. What are the strands that you're working with? What are the different legs that you're running with at the moment?
We currently sort of focus on three main areas. And the first one is around a recommendation engine. Basically then helping create personalized learning path through an educational content. And the reason why that is important is that it helps then students spend time in an effective and efficient way when they're in a digital platform. The second area is in relation to sort of natural language processing, and that comes to pronunciation, where we built an automated pronunciation tool that enables then students to practice and speak English wherever they are and do this by themselves. And this is also something that we've seen and heard from the education industry, that that speaking and pronunciation, sometimes there's not really room for that in the sort of the normal or the standard curriculum. And then lastly, we're also working on a tool, or this is productionized as well, but where then it's called Sana Insights. And that is then about how you help bring actionable insights to teachers. There's a lot of data today in especially in learning portals, but it's actually quite poor in information. And being able to provide that kind of level to actually say that, you know, you should help, or like talk with Pelle about question 2B, or give praise to Sarah who just finished this task, and maybe you should address this topic with the entire class because there's a lot of people who seem to be struggling with it. That kind of information is not something that's really readily available for teachers today.
I will confess that I am not as tech savvy, certainly as your team is. I shouldn't be. I'm curious, from a business development perspective, though, and a corporate development perspective, kind of what's the hen and the egg in the sense of, did you start out looking at a market? Did you start out looking at a target group and a problem? Or did you look at, you know, the potential clients in the educational sector and what they were asking for? Like where does the impetus, how did these three strands grow forth?
I think our journey in many ways is similar to sort of many startups where, I mean, sort of our founding team who has background then from Google and Spotify, they looked more sort of from a top-down lens. Like, where can we apply machine learning to what vertical, and what kind of major area could we use machine learning? And then sort of quickly zoomed into personalization. And then what happens as you then move along, you start talking to customers and people in the industry, you realize you get more granular and you see the need for a lot of new exciting product that you want to build. And I think that's still a little bit where we're at, that we constantly, in our discussions with people in the industry, with teachers, students, and publishers, we constantly see new areas where you could use machine learning to help them and create value.
That sounds like a healthy perspective.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, ultimately you need, there's a need, right? You have to start from the need and listen to the customers, what they really want. I think that goes, I mean, that goes across. That's true for education, it's true for other verticals as well.
What do you see as, you know, to the degree that you are able to glean into that or let us know, what's the next steps? Where are things going?
I can speak a little bit around what's happening maybe in AI, or the possible areas that I think we're going to see a lot of advancement in within maybe the next 5 years. One of those areas is definitely around grammar. And helping, you can also think of grammar or helping sort of teachers and students with insights in how they write. That can be in terms of essays, essay correction falls sort of within that categories. And that's sort of coming from quite recent breakthroughs in text processing using machine learning. So I think grammar and essay correction, that's definitely one part of it. Another area that's really exciting is around then virtual tutors. So taking away some of the load of questions to teachers and enabling students to ask some of those questions in real time to a virtual tutor. There I also see a lot of potential going forward.
All right. When I was working with Impact Investment, one of the themes that we were working with was integration, and language is something that you're speaking about a lot here. That just beckons the curiosity in question. I learned that if we want to teach the people who migrated to Sweden in 2015 and some of those that have arrived before Swedish, then we need theoretically in an analog world as many Swedish teachers, about 30,000,
yeah,
as there even are in the system right now. So we have to magically make appear 30,000 teachers, which by nature won't be done. you know, we can recruit 30,000 English teachers and teach them English instead.
Yeah.
That would be an interesting new industry in Sweden. I don't know how that will fly. But obviously the other question is, you know, but what can we do to make teachers, you know, reach further, the Swedish teachers that we have? You know, can we use, for example, technology to make language teaching go further? So how do you see the potential of what you're working with connecting with that potentially?
I think that's a really interesting area in general for Sweden. And it's also, I mean, globally. And for us, it's sort of close at heart. And I think this really then speaks to how you can solve problems together. So we're actually looking into how we could potentially partner with different players in the SFE market, Swedish for Immigrants. Because looking at SFE, I think, I don't have exact stats, but I think it's roughly that 6 out of 10 passes. So we basically have 40% fail rate or something like that. And I think the average time to complete the course is almost 2 years or something to then sort of have your, that you're actually sort of speaking Swedish in a sort of good, on a good level. So I think there's a lot of improvement you can do there. And given our technology that we both then have a pronunciation system that you could actually then use for Swedish as well and help then sort of practice pronunciation, but also together with our recommendation engine and then helping people learn languages then in a digital setting, sort of more efficient and effective. Then we're only one part of the puzzle, since we're doing then sort of the analytics and the back-end algorithms, and therefore we also need partners in this, and we're looking into and see if we can maybe create something exciting there.
Surely some interesting problems that need some creative takes there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also think that, I mean, when it comes to SFE, that it's also a little bit from the political side, it's a little bit of a blind side. I'm not sure if it's in relation to the sort of the climate, but it's it doesn't seem to be that well funded, sort of for an outsider who looked into it a little bit.
Right. No, I think exactly. One anecdote that I came across working with integration is an SFE is the notion that there were so many of these anecdotal stories of people having been to SFE experiencing that they weren't learning very much or kind of to their aspiration in the classroom. So everyone was learning off YouTube.
Yeah.
Instead. And that's a major educator for Swedish today. You see, there's like courses created by immigrants for immigrants to learn more Swedish and so forth.
And it's really good that they have that, right? And you have that opportunity, but also that if you have that sort of inherent will to actually learn Swedish, that you go out on YouTube and you're really trying to learn yourself. Imagine then if you actually then had more of a good technologic solution together with a good content and curriculum and then a smartness in the way you learn. Imagine then the benefits to that person who's actually willing and do the work to learn Swedish.
I mean, for a market or business development person, you know, that's a fantastic proxy indicator. And like there's a will to do this. The people that want to and have the motivation and want to make the effort, they should definitely have the best possible tools available to them. And clearly, there's something happening here where the system or the market isn't currently providing what's expected or needed, and then new solutions are starting to develop in the shadows of the formal system.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, as a startup as well, because we run into these kind of problems almost on a daily basis, and one day it's SFE in Sweden, another day it could be, I mean, I just came back from a conference in Dubai talking about like a lot of the topics and discussions around then education in Africa. And it's very easy to be dragged into this, and not dragged in a negative way, but like you really, I want to work with these kind of problems because I see how Sana Labs could have a big impact. And for us then, as with many startups, I think prioritization and what you actually then spend your time on, that can sometimes be challenging because you want to do so much in this industry.
That's a really fascinating question. I mean, I think that's a problem that a lot of ventures face, and something that, especially if you have the fortune or have done the good work, so you're getting somewhere, then you'll just get more and more asks for what you're doing. And everyone and their uncle are going to see potential applications. And then you have, you know, in your case also, like there's global education challenges, you know, yeah. just beckoning or, you know, screaming for great
yeah.
solutions.
And especially also, I think that also goes back a little bit to what we're actually doing. I mean, if you look on the concerns that AI sort of brings about, and I mean, one of those concerns is the economic one, that you're basically going to put a lot of people in unemployment because AI is then replacing their jobs. And I think there's going to be a big need, there is today already, from sort of the shift to digital, but in reskilling. So that's another big area of education that we see a huge potential in, and really like there's a big need. But that's also then how should we prioritize to sort of solve that problem. And then we have education in third world countries or developing countries, and also then things like SFE in Sweden. There's a lot of things we want to do.
Yeah, and when you start talking and thinking about scale and, you know, reasonable timeframes, when you take the developing world, you have this enormous scale question, like how do you deliver functional education upskilling to qualify, you know, enormous labor forces? And are we going to build universities left in center? Probably not, right? We're going to start looking towards technology. In Sweden, when you talk about reschooling, you know, when the wharf industry in Sweden faces challenges and a lot of and an economic downturn that put a lot of people out of work, there was a huge concerted effort by public authorities to try and reschool, and that was reasonably perhaps functional over, you know, a number of years, if not decades, that kind of process went on. But now we're seeing this as a constant fact of labor markets and economy, that there's everyone's going to have to start reskilling or upskilling themselves continuously. Yeah. And we need to be able to achieve it not in a decade and a half, but in much shorter time frames, yeah. Right?
No, absolutely. And I mean, Sana Labs, the way we see ourselves in that puzzle is then really to partner with education publishers or online learning portals, and then by helping them become better on what they are then experts on, that's sort of how we then contribute to sort of solving those end user problems, if you can call them that.
You are listening to the Social Innovation Podcast. We bring you the real stories behind the entrepreneurs and innovations pushing the field forward. I'm your host, Henrik Storm-Dursen, and today I'm speaking with Martin Siltberg, who runs business development at Sana Labs. This podcast is sponsored this season by Lexell Social Ventures, an impact investment firm founded by the Lexell family of Sweden. Follow them and us at LexellSocialVentures.com, SocialInnovationPodcast.net, and let us know what you think on Facebook and Instagram. We also publish articles and analysis on Medium. Just search for Social Innovation Podcast. Backtracking slightly to the question that you mentioned earlier of how to find your priorities when there's so much potential. Sana Labs has also had, you know, fantastic attention, you know, grace of the inspiring mission, and also some really exciting technology and an exciting team. So I'm assuming there's lots of pressure and interests trying to, you know, suggest to you what you should be doing. So how does that prioritization work?
We have our strategy that we're trying to follow, and it's really primarily now to scale the products that we have and help solve problems for clients with those products, and then grow with our partners. And you're absolutely right that there are that many opportunities, and of course people who also have ideas, and how you can also, of course, money is then the sort of the tight resource here, right? But I think for now we're really sort of just trying to focus on fewer things and do them really well, and then expand gradually. And I think that might be, if you were talking to an American VC about this strategy, they probably would say that, you know, raise billions of dollars and then just go all in. And I think that's not really our approach, because in the education industry, you need to do things together. And that also, you have to have teachers, you have to work together with them, you have to work together with the publishers. And then just having billions of dollars is not necessarily going to help you to achieve that sort of common goal.
I mean, venture capital and risk capital has you know, its great merits in terms of being able to scale things up, but it also comes with, and increasingly there's a dialogue and recognition of the pressure that that also puts on ventures to, you know, start looking at, you know, quarterly business development life cycles, and you have to, you know, scale this fast. And then in the end, everything becomes about the increase of acceleration of your penetration into target groups and so forth, which can put a lot of pressure. And for the right business, maybe that's exactly the driver you want to really scale up. And for some, it's something that comes in the way of being able to harvest what you have and run product development in the direction that you want in the team.
And I mean, we're very fortunate to have some really great investors on sort of on our side. And also the thing that makes them great is that they're really passionate about education and making that better. And they share our values in that sense. And I think having them to support us in the decisions that we make and help us then focus on creating value for our customers, and that's the key thing. And it's not primarily to, you know, expand to all the different countries in the world and, you know, expand in products and what you can do, right? But it's really around how do we create value for the customers, and we are very happy to have them on our side.
That's something that has been a story developing over the last 30 years, this sector of impact investment and impact enterprise, as it's been growing since the late 80s and forwards, kind of in the vein of social entrepreneurship or whatnot. There's been this theory developed that alignment between investors and enterprise and client needs is something that is a huge value once you start building and scaling a venture. Kind of coming into the corollary of if you're a nonprofit and you have to wax and wane your strategy with whatever funding is available at the moment and whatever agendas that funding is tied to, you know, that's a terribly difficult environment that a lot of the nonprofit sector struggles with. And coming from that perspective, something that this social entrepreneurial movement, as it developed from the 80s and 90s and onwards, became acutely aware of, and how powerful it is when you have capital that can be either patient or purpose-driven, or at least just aligned with whatever the organization has as a fundamental intention, so that you get some leeway to run with that intention.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I think that's a benefit to be in education, is that a lot of people want to make education better just for the sake of making education better. And I think it's always nice to operate in that kind of setting, also when it comes to, of course, to how you fund your business. But also where we're at in the value chain and how we operate, I mean, we're ultimately also a business. On the sort of scale where, you know, social impact and sort of business, we're absolutely a business and not a non-profit, but it's really a mix, right? Because you have always the social mission or the purpose, it's always with you, but you do it then in sort of the business environment.
So Sonalabs has received a lot of attention in Sweden, and I'm sure you do well by garnering attention abroad as well. Is it helpful to build a high profile as a venture? Or is that something that comes with challenges as well?
It's always good to have the right type of publicity. But it's also, especially when it comes to education, you also need trust. And you don't get trust just from publicity. So in many ways, it's good because it opens doors and people know a little bit about what we do. But you also have to be careful not to come across as someone who's not humble to the fact that they're not originating from the education industry, but coming from the tech side. And there's a saying, I think it's called something like, trust is built in drops and lost in buckets. And I think that really sort of speaks to the publicity side, that so far we had good publicity, but it's very easy to lose trust with the education industry as well.
Right. And that's something that we see with a lot of ventures that try to work with something that is close to, for example, the public sector.
Yeah.
where you're trying to provide something super valuable to the public sector, but perhaps there is alternative stories out there that, you know, you're replacing jobs or you're you come with a technology play that might, you know, go adversely against the, you know, either legal or responsibility principles of how things are done in healthcare or what it may be. So it's cool that you have that awareness with you.
Yeah, and it becomes very awkward also if you're in one moment, if you're starting. I mean, like the typical way a startup talks, right, is about disruption and you're going to make a lot of change. And if you're then coming with that sort of mindset, then you're talking to a teacher who is actually spending, you know, their entire days, or, you know, a publisher who, you know, spend so much time on making really good education materials and books, and then your solution, who then fits into one part of the puzzle, you quickly become, I would say, arrogant and rude almost, if you have that attitude.
It's going to be a challenge as well, and it's going to put some pressure on you working alongside this questioning critical narrative around AI that's out there. That's omnipresent, as it were, in relating to automation and so forth. And you have to build for your own business and brand a story of how you're going to help, which is attractive. So I can see you having some decent success with that if you put down the work. But I guess it's something that you have to keep even steps with, of constantly kind of being on your toes and being out there with that positive story of how you augment, how you complement, how you strengthen education, and that it's not work fast and break education.
Exactly. I think we've seen that in many other industries, right? Move fast and things break, for sure. And the thing with education is that it can't break because it's so important that you can't have that kind of negative spillover if you're pushing too fast. And of course, that is also sometimes frustrating, not only for us, but also for our partners, that there's so many in this education, like in the industry, who wants to really make a change. And but change takes time.
So you're already making money.
Yeah.
You're selling services, solutions, and clearly there's a lot of purpose in Sana. So how does business and purpose balance in Sana? Do they come at an odds in any cases?
In most cases, it's pretty straightforward, since we're selling to other private, or not private, but other companies who has sort of a P&L responsibility to their shareholders, right? So, I mean, in that sense, most of the time it's quite straightforward. But then an issue that we have, or we sometimes then run into these kind of separate products. So take SFE, for example, where in all fairness, we could do a lot of good for SFE, but it doesn't really fit into our everyday business model. And we could put a lot of resources into it and create a lot of value, we think, but we couldn't really motivate it from the business side, even though we could make an impact. And I think that's the kind of challenges we have, that it's hard then to do that. And we have tried, and we're looking into different forms of if you could then somehow do partnership and put this sort of as a social venture on the side. So maybe you can use our technology, but you maybe fund it in a different way, or like we're trying to be creative in that, and we haven't figured it out yet.
That's fascinating. I think I'm going to interpret in here a call to action to kind of politics and public service to think creatively about how to connect with ventures like yours. And it's a challenge we see a lot of ventures facing, that it's hard to sell to the public sector, even if you have the potential to create a lot of public good.
Yeah.
In this case, you know, come on. But public sector needs to get into the game in this, and figure out how to meet, you know, ventures like yours halfway.
Exactly. Find those sort of collaborations between social impact and businesses. And in terms of education, it's both good and bad, because in Sweden we have a quite sort of we have a lot of decision power with teachers, which is really good, which makes it also easier to do, for example, tests of new products or new technologies, that the barriers to actually get in and try your product with, for example, with kids is, I would say, is quite low in Sweden, which is really good. The problem then arises is that if you have a really good product that can make an impact, it's then also harder to scale because there's so many decision makers that's involved. And I really think that in terms of how you foster innovation and technology and education in particular, the government needs to have some kind of coordination.
But you're also giving a good example here of, well, in the absence of that, there might be for-profit sectors, companies, organizations, institutions that have the capability to distribute, that can see like minds in terms of using your product within existing platforms and so forth that you were talking about. And maybe that then is the space where the innovation can thrive at the moment.
No, absolutely. And I mean, I'm hoping we're able to announce something soon in that area, because that would then be sort of a step how you can actually work with some of these problems in education, but then do it both from the social impact way, the funding side, and also then the actual sort of the business side. So yeah, hopefully we'll see more of that.
We'll have to stay tuned then.
Yeah.
Great cliffhanger. What are you personally, or what is Sana learning at the moment? What's the last thing that you're like, wow, really?
It feels like we're learning so much constantly. It's a lot around how you build new user experiences with the technology we're developing. Since we're really operating in the back end mostly, we're an API-based solution, we're really starting to now figure out together with our partners, how can you make this into a good learning experience? And an example of this is, I mean, if you look at Spotify, right, you have your Discovery Weekly. That's built in back end on different AI solutions, right, and algorithms. Why couldn't you have a Repetition Weekly in your online portal? Before, you couldn't really have that, or you could, but it wouldn't be that smart and it wouldn't be that personalized towards you. That's one use case with our solution, that you could actually build that now with Sana Labs. But we're learning that a little bit as we go, as we sort of talk to publishers and how they are building. And I think there we learn something new almost every day.
Cool. Something that we speak about that comes up now and again is the sustainability of the actual kind of ventures and organizations pursuing these super exciting opportunities of creating business with purpose. But that also comes down to the individual level of, like, is the team sustainable? Are you sustainable? It's a lighthearted question in that regard. It seems like you're working on exciting stuff, Martin. And there's probably, you know, incredible amounts of things to do and a to-do list that never ends. How do you unwind? How do you, you know, step away from it all and get your inspiration?
That's a very good question. I think I have a natural talent for it. My mother sometimes called me a goose, or okay, when things just fall off you. So I think just coming home, spending time with my girlfriend, or traveling in the weekends, and just do normal stuff. That pretty much takes that gives me good sort of rest and relaxation.
Sounds like a good flow to be in.
Yeah, but I think also, like, I mean, if it's a little bit cheesy, right? But I mean, the classical thing that, you know, if you like what you do, or like if you like what you're working with, you're never working. Yeah. But I have a lot of fun during the days, and I meet so many interesting people, and it's such a big range from, I mean, we're having this conversation today, and then, you know, the next day I'm talking to a teacher, the next day after that I'm talking to a student, and then I'm talking to a CEO of a global education publisher, and then I have everything in between. And that gives me a lot of energy.
Seems like you're the right man for the job. What do you do as a team to unwind and connect and, like, build your team?
And I'd say one of the biggest thing we have game nights, and now we also have a new office, and we had a really fun game night this Monday. We meet after work and we eat pizza and we play board games. That's, for example, one thing that we do.
Is there anything that you think is important for young talent that are keen on getting into this sector, this field? People thinking about, you know, leaving their jobs and getting into innovating education or getting into, you know, social enterprise, if you want to call that. Have you had any personal reflections on that? Like, what would you, from your experience and what you've learned so far, what would you send with to people, you know, curious on this field?
I would say go for it. And because this is really, if you're into education and you're passionate about changing that, I think you should definitely do it. Then the challenge is that it is one of those areas where a lot of people have ideas and a lot of people are very passionate, which also then creates a large group of startups. And there's so many people trying then different things how to then improve education. I think that's one of the challenges then, that there's, I think there's a challenge for, you know, going all the way or actually sort of building a business or around that. But it, even though if you fail or, you know, if you succeed, at the end of the day, you're doing something good, and that therefore, like, yeah, go for it.
I'm going to piggyback on that and say, when we were working with Impact Investing, we screened over 600 ventures, and it was really curious to realize that over a fourth of the applications we got were from the educational space. People trying to improve schools, improve teaching, all kinds of things, not necessarily with technology. A lot of things from the nonprofit sector, just trying to make school environment better or whatnot. And they were struggling so badly because it's hard to sell in that space when you're trying to target, for example, individual schools and principals and so on. The system just isn't really geared up for it. But you have amazing talent, great ideas, great insights, yeah, long experiences in the educational system that are kind of struggling sometimes, yeah, to get real. And to me, it's inspiring to see that we're now seeing champions like Sana, like Cognity, like others, for example, the ed tech space. But I'm sure there will come other champions as well where you're cracking business models. So like you're actually making money with it and creating spaces, creating organizations, creating environments and ecosystems, yeah, even where things are getting done. So I think that is something that I take home from this conversation, that we can increasingly see a nexus and an ecosystem of innovation for education.
Yeah.
I mean, that's existed abroad for a long time. And with social enterprise, developing country perspective has always been big with education, but less so here in the kind of welfare state environment, that this is starting to grow now. And they're starting to, you know, there's a home,
yeah,
being built.
And also I think, I mean, for startups and entrepreneurs, or just, I mean, if you have a solution that you think, you know, will work in education, it is a special industry. And in other fields, you would be more competitive and, you know, keep things close. While in education, it's almost always better to be open, be transparent, and actually trying to work together, because there is a lot of rigidity in the market, and it takes time, and most people have sort of the same issues, especially when you're growing. So I'd say also just a tip is, don't see it as sort of a head-to-head competition, but see it sort of as, you know, I don't know if it's something called competition, collaboration or something, but that's the way I think to move forward.
Martin, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hugo Morris, Lexell Social Ventures. Welcome again to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Henrik. Great to be here.
So we're speaking about Sana Labs, and they're active in the education sector, where LSV also has an interest. Where do you see the challenges in the education sector that you guys are interested in?
I think two primary challenges that we find really daunting and that we think Sana has a great traction onto is really how we can provide smarter and better and more efficient education in terms of how do we provide students with content and how do we adapt that content to be suitable to each individual student. So it's about personalizing and providing smarter content. And then the second aspect is that of scalability. We today see a huge lack of qualified teachers in Sweden, also in other places. And how can we solve that through providing a scalable tech product?
What segments of education do you see this playing out? There's higher education, there's secondary schooling and so forth.
I mean, absolutely. And I think that's the traditional block where we tend to look like. And that's also one of the more important ones. However, I think Sauna providing through their AI product, they're actually providing Intel as a service, right? So I think what they managed to do is actually to join together a wide number of content and educational actors, maybe within the school system or in corporate education or, you know, for other types of education, such as in the integration process, etc. So I think they have an ability to reach across a number of sectors.
Right. And you mentioned integration there, which is another of LSV's investment themes. So where do you see the needs for improving education in that space?
I mean, today in Sweden, we have a primary actor called Swedish for Immigrants, SFE. And today, when we look at the statistics, we see that only 37% of students who enroll and start courses with SFE actually graduate and get their grades in terms of having completed the course.
Taking over 2 years, as Martin mentioned.
Yeah. Right. So that's a pretty lousy result. So I think one of the challenges, not the only one, is that people come into these, you know, Swedish for Immigrant courses with completely, you know, different sort of preconditions, right? There might be different ages, they might have different levels of education, et cetera, et cetera. So what Sauna has the ability to do, and what we're currently, LSV, together with Sauna and also Iris Gruppen, is testing in a pilot project, is to see if we can add this aspect of personalized content and personalized education for newly arrived in the Swedish for Immigrants classes.
So how do you've gone in as an investor, so you're presumably taking, you know, a multi-year perspective on Sauna's development and growth here. What's your thoughts on how Sauna wants to grow and how it wants to leverage its investment resources?
I mean, I think currently, up to this point, it's been really good for Sauna to rely on a really qualified group of private and also therefore patient investors, right? I think their product in this case, their AI, is so advanced that they will find it quite difficult. And I think Martin is hinting towards that in his episode, to find VCs that really have that expertise in order to help them technically. So I think their challenge going forward now is going to be finding you know, a bigger VC-like investor who can not only provide them with capital, but also provide them with the technical expertise that they need.
So for LSV, what would a home run be with this investment in Sauna?
For LSV, I think initially we see the potential for sort of a home run in terms of, you know, global expansion and a global market for Sauna. And I think that's obviously a given. But I think secondarily, also if we look at the educational crisis in Sweden, a home run for us would be, you know, for example, could we see Sauna established within the Swedish school system? Could we have Sauna as Intel as a service in all of the Swedish schools, for example, you know, to some extent covering that gap of the missing, you know, whatever, 20,000, 30,000high qualified teachers that we don't have today.
All right. Well, Hugo, thank you for coming to the podcast.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Social Innovation Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Today, I spoke with Martin Stiltberg, who runs business development at Sauna Labs, pioneering AI for education. Let us know your thoughts and follow us on Medium, Facebook, and Instagram. Just search for Social Innovation Podcast. Thank you for listening. This podcast is edited by Stop Making Sense Productions. Until next time, this is your host, Henry Stormgerson.